Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Backyard Labrish. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome everyone calling in tonight and also those listening online to our weekly Labrish. If you're one of our fans, you will know that Backyard Labrish is established to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. My name is Margaret, and I started this broadcast. August was 2 years, just because I am retired. I have been a citizen of the United States for a very long time. I migrated to the States in 1959 and really sort of lost track with my Jamaican roots while I was making my life and career here. And I am so excited to have reconnected because I'm learning more about my culture as it was when I was growing up than I ever did when I lived there. So I thank you for being loyal fans, because we know we have a lot of people listening, not necessarily on the night we broadcast, but I suppose the word is getting out that we are bringing to life some very interesting stories of days gone by. And I do my research based on just what I think may be interesting. And I'm always asking for my listeners to participate in the selection of what we talk about as well as the conversation, because this is the whole format of this platform is to be in a virtual backyard as we would be in if we were in Jamaica. I think if we have Jamaicans listening from Jamaica, they know what I'm talking about, because you're really relaxed in the evenings. When I was growing up, that was the style, and I'm sure it's perhaps even more so now. But, you know, you would either be on the terrace. Some of the houses had terrace that you could go upstairs on top of it. They had flat roofs in those days. And some people would have a beautiful garden that they could relax in, or on the front veranda, or on the beach, or wherever. But after it got dark, the trade winds would start blowing across the island, and it would just be time to chill. And if you had friends come over, you would be perhaps participating in a conversation that would be interesting to everyone. So when visitors ask what is a labrish, or when I mention to a foreigner about a labrish, they have sometimes no clue as to what a labrish is. And I really never thought of, I don't know if there's an explanation for what a labrish is. I know what it does, and I describe it as a group of like minds getting together to talk. It's not necessarily a gossip. Could be, I suppose. But in this case, we are labrishing or getting together to talk and discuss and interact about an interesting subject. So I know that we have covered a lot of material, and most times I get my subjects from some wonderful researchers that are residing in Jamaica. And tonight I am featuring an article from Pieces of the Past that was written by Dr. Rebecca Tortello. So I would like to give her credit and thank her for all the wonderful articles that are there to remind us of different aspects of our culture, events. So I encourage my listeners, whether you are a fan of Jamaica, you visited, you're a Jamaican, or a Jamaican, or in somehow connected, to check out Pieces of the Past that is published by the Daily Gleaner, and it's online. So it's there for everyone to discover. So again, I want to thank the fans for being my very faithful supporters. So now tonight we're discussing Jamaican museums. And I'm always learning something new from just doing the research. And I was really impressed when I read that currently there are more than 20 museums. They're not listed. And I'm hoping that some of our callers on the board will be able to fill me in on some of the ones that they may know about that I don't. Because the only one I remember as I was growing up in Kingston was the Institute. And I remember my cousin and I can't remember what year it would be. We perhaps were just early teens, and I was born in 1935, so, you know, I'll go way back there. But we would go to the Institute to see Charlie Chaplin movies, and there were silent movies. And I remember how thrilled we had talkies, as they used to call them. But we had cowboy movies and all the current movies of the 40s. However, because I loved history, my cousin and I would go to the library on special evenings when they would show these Charlie Chaplin movies. There were silent movies. And I remember them distinctly when I started to do the research on the museums. And, of course, as usual, I'm always asking for my listeners on the board to hit one on your telephone, and I'll know that you want to join the labrish. So I am going to be looking for a raised hand. But let me just fill you in on Dr. Tortella's article in Pieces of the Past. I call myself bringing her stories to life. And I don't always read them word for word because I always like to put my two cents in and invite other people to sort of, you know, paraphrase it. And I must tell my listeners that I have a challenged sight. So sometimes it's a little difficult for me to read all the letters in the words because I'm getting quite old. But I love what I do. And I do hope that my listeners find, you know, some pleasure in listening and will help me to contribute to the show. So here it goes. Now, she starts off by giving us some information on what museums are really supposed to be. And the International Commission on Museums, which is hyphenated ICOM, defines a museum as a socially responsible institute dedicated to serving the public. Museums are generally recognized as cultural institutions that record and publicly express a sense of national identity. They house and exhibit artifacts, natural and man-made, that presents links to a nation's historical, scientific, and socio-cultural past. So that really is an apt description. Now, museums in the Caribbean. The history of museums in the Caribbean goes back to the end of the 19th century when colonizers began to create museums in order to promote the colonies' commercial and agricultural interests and stimulate investment. Over that time occurred in regions, museum structure are more Caribbean national assumed administrative and administration positions. However, it wasn't until the 1960s, which marked the beginning of the region's post-colonial era, that the culture of the majority, began to be included and represented. So what I gather from that up until 1960, because we were a British colony, and I mean they collected and documented information that was relevant to whatever their interest was, and not necessarily covered all of the culture as it should be of everyone on the various islands. And if any of the callers agree with me, but that's what I sort of gathered from that, which made sense. Now, we're going to talk about that. That is Dr. Tortella's description of Caribbean museums in general, from what she documented or observed. Now, Jamaican museums. To gain perspective on Jamaican museums, the story of British colonial education must be understood. The implementation of policy and practice with an agenda based on perceived notions of the educational culture and the social abilities of the colonized. Now I am gathering that, you know, what she's saying here is that they had an agenda. Now, I find that very interesting and of course true, because I remember what I would observe when I went to the museum as a child. It was really a lot of current things that were happening at the time. And I'm talking about perhaps the 50s, the late 40s and 50s. And I see that we have several callers on board, 973-631-404-305. So remember, I'm asking you to join the Labrish here. So put in your 2 cents. Now, let's talk about, it's not a very long article, but I really do suggest when we bring anything to light that you really go to the pieces of the past and read it, because it's really interesting. It's not very long articles, but, you know, you can get a better feel for what the story is about, because we try to fit as much as we can into the segment of time that we have. And, of course, I'm always doing my sidebar. But I do encourage you to really go and check it out. There are wonderful articles that cover all different aspects of our culture. So let me get back to the article now. The Institute of Jamaica was established in 1879. It was the first organization of its kind in the Caribbean region, also known as Creolization. The unstructured alteration of practice in response to interaction between different peoples and culture forms was able to occur. The Institute of Jamaica, and this was from, she quoted that phrase from a writing by Lewis in 1967. Okay. The collection, it was first formed, I suppose, the first organization of its kind in the Caribbean. So apparently there was not a similar institute on any of the other islands at the time. And the collection came from the joining of the then-defunct Royal Society of Arts and the Agricultural, which was founded in 1864 with the Library of the Jamaica House of Assembly, which was established in 1872. I mean, way back then. The early IOJ, which is the short for the Institute of Jamaica, was located in downtown Kingston in a building known as Date Tree Hall. I don't know if anybody ever heard of that building. The IOJ's founder, Sir Anthony Musgrave, was Jamaica's British governor from 1877 to 1883. It is said to have been a deep sense of the role which art and culture played in the field of education. It is believed that he intended the IOG to stand as an incentive for the better understanding and appreciation of literature, science, and art. And this is quoted from the writing of a Duke Quincy in 1966. Now, Lewis explains, who is one of the writers that she's quoting, explained that the IOJ was designed to help government in the advancement of culture on the island and served various other functions as it's holding adult education classes until the development of the University of the West Indies in the 1940s. So, it is understood here that the Institute held adult education classes up until the university was established. Now, when first established, the IOJ indicated, according to Baxter, that the island's cultural orientation had changed to one in which the center, while still reflecting British cultural influence, was firmly based in Jamaica. Yet, initially, the IOJ's mission was not directed at the general population. It was geared to the better understanding and appreciation of literature, science, and art for a select proportion of that population. It was not until the mid-1930s, the scene of much labor unrest in Jamaica, when a group of young Jamaicans who had mainly been educated outside of the country and exposed to the liberal trend of socialism joined the IOJ's board. That lobbying took place for the programs and exhibitions to begin to reflect the faces, places, and concerns of the masses of the Jamaican people. By the 1960s, art began to reflect the people and the country in which it was being displayed, and public programs began to be opened up to a larger audience. Later, during the 1970s, the IOJ's board was reorganized, and the Institute's responsibility for promoting the development of literature, science, and the arts and culture in general, and the preservation of national monuments re-emphasized. Specifically, in 1978, the Institute of Jamaica Act of 1879 was repealed, and it became administered by a council comprising of not less than 10 or more than 25 people appointed by the Minister of Education, Youth, and Culture. Today, the Institute is located on East Street and oversees the following six divisions. Now, it has the Natural History Division, which was formerly the Science Museum and Art Division, that was established in 1891. It has the National Gallery of Jamaica, established as a portrait gallery in 1892. It has the African Caribbean Institute of Jamaica and Jamaica Memory Bank. It has a museum division and two junior centers on East Street and Portmore. And these were established in 1941. Now, the museum's division is responsible for the IOJ's exhibition gallery on East Street. So it goes on to really tell you the different functions of the Institute in general. Now, some 125 years after the founding of the IOJ, Jamaica's museum landscape has evolved to include a wide range of offerings that present various components of Jamaica's rich cultural heritage. Now, this is the part I found interesting, and I really need some input from the board about this, because there is no organized place I can find where these different museums are. It says here, registered museums. The island boasts some 20 registered museums and even more unregistered, smaller, community-focused museums. Of those that are registered, a little less than half are government-funded and located in Kingston metropolitan area. In addition to those affiliated with the Institute in Kingston, some of which offer term, time, and summer programs for kids, and the National Heritage Trust, which is responsible for historic houses and museums, as well as privately founded institutions such as the ICWI, I'm not sure what that means, Science Learning Center. There are different names here, and it doesn't say where they're located. There is a institute that is connected to the Michael Training College, and there's the Bank of Jamaica's Money Institute. We discussed that a little when we talked about the money on one of our programs. There's the Bob Marley Museum, the Rural Childhood Home of in Hanover, which is another museum for Bob Marley, I think. Chris Blackwell's Otterius-based Reggae Explosion, which is also a museum. And that is as many as is named, but there are 20 registered museums. So I'm throwing this question out to the people on the board, because the only one that I was aware of is the Institute of Jamaica. So I'm asking, does anyone on the board know any of these museums or any that are not named in this article? So would you please raise your hands for me, hit 1 on your telephone so I can know that you want to talk to me. So while I wait for a hand to be raised, I'm going to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And when we come to the backyard, we relax in our favorite chair. We pretend we're virtually on the island of Jamaica, wherever we find relaxing, whatever part of our home or part of the island that we would feel the no problem man feeling, which is just chilling. And we just think about the days that we spent there, whether it was just on a short vacation or a long life or a short life like mine, because I've lived in the state I'm living now longer than I ever lived in Jamaica. And I've lived in the United States for the major portion of my life. But like a lot of the people in the diaspora, I love my roots and love to talk about it. And unfortunately, I am not too familiar with the now Jamaica because I left long before the island became independent. So I'm still learning about that part of it. But I find that I know a lot less about the island as it was when I grew up. And I have been fascinated by all the wonderful stories of the past that have been brought to light by Dr. Joy Lumsden, who is a research scientist who lives in Jamaica, Dr. Tortello, who wrote this article that I'm fumbling through, and also Olive Senior, who has a marvelous one of her books. She has several publications, but I was given a gift of the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage by Olive Senior that I have used on several of the shows. So I am just like a kid discovering all these neat stories about the island, you know, in 18 this and 17 that, and even during my time, some of the things that I could remember, like, you know, perhaps one of the hurricanes, and I don't know for anyone else, but I remember as a child growing up, I experienced quite a few earthquakes. Not severe ones where buildings crash, but I remember rocking and rolling in kindergarten, in different periods of my school when I was, you know, my school years. And I don't know if they're having those shakes now, but I remember when I was growing up, I experienced quite a few. So my memories of the Institute was marvelous. At the time, I didn't even realize that there were perhaps not a lot of information or artifacts or representation of the whole island as it was then, but I was really fascinated by what was available at the time. So I would like for someone on the board to tell me if they have visited any of these other museums or if they may have a story of when they were growing up, if you went to Kingston or from Kingston, and may have some memories of going to the Institute. So do I have a raised hand from anyone? Come on now, don't leave me in my chair alone. I need some company. I see several people on the board, and I know you just don't call in to hear my voice. You want to be part of the Labrish. But while you're trying to make up your mind, I would like to propose a marvelous idea I had this morning. Part of the reason I'm calling out for help is that there is not a lot of, I've been all over the internet trying to find out some details about the other the other registered museums, except for those that I called out that is on this article. It's not 20 of them. I know it's not 20 of them, so there are those that were not mentioned. But I went online, and I saw that there was a Bob Marley museum in Kingston. There's also another one, another part of the island. There is a museum in Ocherius, and there is a Marcus Garvey museum. I think it's called Liberty Hall. And that is, I think, about the life of Marcus Garvey. There's the Money Museum that I remember discussing that when we discussed the museum. And there's the, I have here, there's an Arawak Museum. And there's something called the People's Museum in Spanishtown. And I really don't have any information on any of these. So I am wondering if there's anyone on the board, if there's anyone listening online, in order to interact with me, you have to call in on the telephone. So I'm not able, or send me an email that I can know that you were there or know that you need to have a question answered later at another time, because I cannot interact with you online and on the board at the same time. I'm sort of limited to just doing one thing. You remember, I'm a little old. But anyway, I try to be comical. This was the idea I had. You know, part of why I established Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio was because I wanted my grandchildren. I have three grandsons that are quite young, and already everything for them is online. They're pushing buttons to do everything. So I know their future will all be in cyberspace. Most of their learning will be on the computer. And things that are going to be researched is not going to be from a book, is going to be from the computer. So I really believe that, especially the seniors, as seniors, we need to start leaving our information, both what we experience that can be written or spoken in cyberspace where future generations can find them. But, you know, I tell my listeners, 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago, I think, my house burnt down, and I lost a lot of my pictures and things I had from my mother and grandmother that, you know, were not saved. I was fortunate to save a few things, but I think it's really important to photograph the things that are meaningful to you. You might not believe that they might be important to your family, but you never know. You know, sometimes one person in a large family may be the one who will research the family tree and will be very curious, perhaps, about you as an individual. So as Dr. Tortello described, really, what a museum is, we always think about it just as a building that houses, you know, these artifacts or information. But we can do the same thing in cyberspace and have our own museums with our family name. So part of what I want to do tonight is to just give you that idea that you may, if you're not able to do it because of one reason or another, you might perhaps assign someone in your family. Because I think it's something that needs to be done. We, as seniors, a lot of times we feel that the younger generation is not really interested in what went on in our day. And to be very frank with you, I remember my mother trying to give me some information when I was raising my kids, and I was always telling her I didn't have time. I didn't have time to listen to her story now because I had to do one thing or the other, and we'll do it next week. And we'll do it, you know, when we go on vacation. Needless to say, it never got done because I remember, you know, I never really expected my mother to die when she did. You know, you don't think of these things at the time. But no, I wish I had listened to some of those stories because I don't know what she wanted to tell me. And I'm an only child. I don't have any siblings. Plus, I am the eldest of my cousins. So I would have more information perhaps than anybody else. And here I am wishing I had paid attention. So I have made a promise to myself that I am going to leave some information to the people that are, for the people that are important to me. So I'm sorry, my phone is disturbing the call, but I got rid of it. So I'm back, and I want to encourage my listeners really to take this seriously, especially if you, whether you're a senior or not. Everyone has a story, and we all have something important to contribute to the next generation. And we need to embrace the technology that we have available to us at this period, because our mothers didn't have it. So we are very, very fortunate to have use of this technology. And I know a lot of seniors tend to not want to be bothered to learn, and it's not as difficult really as you think. And of course, you can always get help. There are different programs at different centers that can help you if you don't have someone in your family that will be patient enough, because I know it takes a lot of patience to deal with us when we're getting old. I can say that for sure. But however, you know, it is important that we get it done. And I am thinking that perhaps next year, I would like to start something on the website, backyardlabrish.com, that perhaps would have to do with, you know, putting together some memories of the Jamaica we knew, because that Jamaica does not exist again. You know, things I read in one of the articles I was reading about one of the museums, very short article, about them having a yaba pot that was made from calabash. And I'm sure that the children that are growing up in Jamaica now have no idea perhaps what a yaba pot was. And having a picture of it, apparently they have the actual thing, yaba, in one of the museums there. But the Jamaicans or the children of Jamaicans that may not ever get to that museum would enjoy seeing a picture. So whatever you have in your family that it came from your grandmother or great-grandmother, whether it's a picture or an object, you can make a picture of the object and put it together on cyberspace. So I suggest that we create our own personal museums. So with that said, I'm asking again for anyone on the board that would like to make a comment or give me some information about the museums that I'm not familiar with, or tell us a story about one they've visited or one that may have impacted them. I mean, I have been to some marvelous museums all over the world, not all over the world, but all over the U.S. And also I went to Madrid and just had a marvelous time touring the museums, because as you can imagine, I do have a love for history, or I have developed a love for history. I don't remember having a love for history when I was young and growing up, because a lot of the things that apparently was available, I didn't know. or perhaps I was in the right place at the right time, but I am really learning some marvelous stories about things that happened way before my time in Jamaica and to Jamaicans. So with that said, I am going to ask again for someone on the board if you would like to join the Labrish. I know we're all getting ready for Big Turkey Day tomorrow. I want to take this opportunity to, first of all, express my thanks to all of my listeners and all of my supporters, those that are on the board, online, and those who may come by later. I am so grateful and so thankful to have you all in my lives, although we might never meet, but I can see your numbers and I can feel your energy. And it's so encouraging to me when I go to the back office of Blog Talk Radio and see how fast the numbers of downloads are just going up and spiraling. And I guess it's because you're not only listening online, but you're perhaps telling your friends about some particular show that you might find interesting. And if you have not yet done so, I encourage you to look in the archives. All of the shows are posted according or saved according each month. We do one show a week, and so there are apparently over 100 shows now, because last August was our second anniversary. So there are several shows about all different aspects of Jamaica of the past. And all of them were taken from different historians. And we have had been blessed with visits from, you know, some important people. Everybody is important. But we had a senior citizen with us who gave us her memory of when she was growing up in Jamaica. I think Aunt Gladys was 92 or 95 when she spoke to us. And unfortunately, she has recently, you know, been ill and not able to communicate. So it just tells me how important it is for us to tell our stories while we can, because we never know, you know, what tomorrow brings. But I am hoping that tomorrow will bring each of you just a wonderful day and some time to reflect on all the things that you're thankful for. And me personally, I am thankful for life, for all the wonderful things that we have available to us, for my family, and most of all, for my fans on Backyard Labrish. So with that said, if no one is going to talk, I think we will have to say goodnight. Oh, I see 631 with hands up, but I think I know who this is. So I'll open the mic and say, hello, you've got Margaret in the backyard, pre-Turkey Day. Who do I have?
Hi, Margaret. This is Janine from Long Island. I'm sorry, I was in and out of the kitchen and on the phone. My cordless wasn't working. So I'm like in the kitchen and on the phone, so I really didn't concentrate too much tonight. But surprisingly, I know they had museums, but for some reason I'm drawing blank. I couldn't help you because I couldn't remember them myself.
Well, had you ever been to the Institute of Jamaica?
Yes,
when you were there?
I think I did, yes. But as I said,
okay.
For some reason, I'm drawing blank on that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you
well,
know,
they had
I know it exists.
A weekly program. They showed movies. I don't remember what night it was. Mm-hmm. But I had a cousin who now resides in London, and she was sort of in my age group. And we used to go to see the Charlie Chaplin silent movies.
Yes.
And I mean, I know that sounds so old.
No. Yeah, but I remember a little of that.
Had you ever seen a silent movie?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. because yeah. I'm not going to say a lot, but at least
I've seen it. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. And I can't remember what year it was, but they used to show them, you know, like once a week. I don't remember if it was once a week or once a month, but we would go together as a little team all the time, and I just absolutely loved it.
Yes.
And of course, in the days when I was growing up, you know, Carib was the big thing in Kingston that we went to matinee. And I remember my father always take me to see the cowboy movies. And in those days, they had these serials where, you know, you would end with a cliffhanger and you couldn't wait to get back the next week.
Right, right.
You know, to see the thing fell down the cliff or what. You know, whatever happened. But it was mostly cowboy movies that in those days.
Yes, that's true. So, I remember that. That I remember because I went a lot for that, especially since I was living in Rockford at the time I went to Rialto.
Wasn't there Palace on there too?
Palace was further down.
And you had Gaiety. Remember that name.
And you had Gaiety, and you had Ward Theatre.
Right.
You had a lot of, yes.
Uh-huh.
I went to Carib too, but the one I really went to a lot for the cowboy movie was Rialto, because that was during the week.
Right. So, now, were any of those movie theaters open, where you could see up in the sky?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, because I remember that. I remember that there was no roof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was designed like that.
Yeah.
I have to be careful when I say that because people might think that the roof was destroyed or something. It was designed with no roof.
Yes, yes, a certain section.
So I don't remember if I was ever there and it rained. I can't remember any of that.
No, I can't remember getting wet, but... Uh-huh. I don't think all the theaters were like that. Maybe one.
No, well, Ward Theatre and Carib weren't, but I know that the one I used to go to is either Gaiety or
Palace.
I think for some reason that name sort of sticks out to me.
Yes, I think.
But it was on a main road, and I lived in the Rockford area too, so it might have been one of those.
Yes, I don't remember Rialto. Although I know as a fact that there were times when, you know, boys, they are very mischievous. There was a tree close to the theater that when they didn't want to pay, they would climb the tree and they were able to see the movie.
Right.
The tree.
Therefore,
that's telling me it didn't have a roof, right?
Uh-huh.
That is telling me that it didn't have a roof all the way for them to be able to do that.
Oh, that's why they were able to see it,
yes.
But I remember also there was a club going on the way to the airport at the time that didn't have a roof. It had a circle cut out in the roof. And I remember that, you know, he wasn't my husband then, but we used to go there quite often.
Yeah.
So the no roof thing was in at the time because we didn't have air conditioning.
And I guess
Did we have air conditioning in Carib in those days?
Yes, I think we did.
I can't remember really, but I remember.
I think Ward Theatre would have it too because the performance that they have there.
But this theatre particularly didn't need it. Couldn't have it because there was no roof.
Roof, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you remember the houses in Kingston having a flat roof, and there was a terrace on top. You could go upstairs.
Yeah, like a balcony.
On top of the roof?
Yes. Yeah, they used to call it the balcony. You go up some steps on the outside, and then you go up on top. Yes.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And boy, it was very cool and pleasant up there.
Yeah, when you have party, you can go up there and dance because it's
right,
cooler.
Right. I don't know if they're, I'm sure they're not constructing houses like that anymore.
Oh, not with what's happening
and it
down
was
here.
A different time. But I, you know, there is no, there are several things that I remember in the, you know, 40s and early 50s that I, there's no documentation of those places existing anywhere online.
Oh, yeah?
Like those theaters that we're talking about. You know, Carib is there because it's a historic place, and Ward
yes.
Theater is
right.
There's information about that because it's historic. You know, I'm going to do I think I did a show on that Ward Theater before, but I'll check it out. And if not, it has a fascinating story. However, there are
it down,
many
you know.
Other places that was important
mm-hmm.
to when I was growing up, what important to me and my friends, I suppose,
yes.
like the club I told you about and
yes.
Bournemouth Gardens at the
oh,
time
yes.
was very popular.
Yes, mm-hmm.
And
I
we
remember
used to
that.
Go there to swim and
mm-hmm.
to party.
And to party, yes. Mm-hmm.
Right, right. I remember that distinctly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of documentation on that at all. I can't find anything.
Well, you know, Margaret, I'm not surprised about that because that area is no longer the way it was.
Uh-huh.
I'm telling you, they're not even driving. Usually when you're coming from the airport, you'd use Harborview and come on the Rockfort and branch off to wherever you're going. But that
uh-huh.
area now is not safe anymore, and people don't really even use that area for commuting from the airport to wherever. They now built another road. I was told I haven't used it because I haven't been down there for a while. But there is now another road that is branching off more down into the city, and then you take it from there wherever you're going. But the Rockfort area is not the Rockfort that you and I grew up.
Right, I know, but it would be good if there was something or, you know, that would tell the way it was. Because if I am telling a story about the things I did for my grandchildren, the things I did
mm-hmm.
when I was growing up, you know, I just, it would be good if I had a picture. That's what I am talking about,
yeah,
making
like
your
the
own
landmark. You mean
no,
like
your
a
own museum.
Yeah.
Where you would document, let's call it a virtual museum then. You know, if you would document events, if you had pictures and so on and so forth. Because, as you say, it doesn't exist anymore.
Yes, no.
You know,
no,
those places don't exist, period.
No.
So it is important for us to leave a legacy
mm-hmm.
as much as we can.
Right.
Because here we are now saying that we remember these things, and you're saying it is not like that anymore.
No, it's definitely
so
that area is not safe anymore. That's
right. But my point is each person have their own story. They have a wealth of information
right.
that it would be a good idea if we made an effort you know, to start to
yeah.
document it.
Yeah.
So because we're covering museums in this segment and we have limited information, there's a lot more information about the Institute
mm-hmm.
and what it has done. And it houses really a remarkable amount of even written material. I was reading some time ago where some of the material is so fragile
mm-hmm.
that they can't even photograph it.
Wow.
And because, of course, limited funds, like all, the rest of all over the world, you know, funds would be even more limited for things like that would be considered not, you know, not necessary for life right now.
Right.
So it's a good idea for people to take that into consideration, that we don't even know how long some of the things that are even housed now and will last because some of it is so fragile.
Yes, that's true.
You know, that they cannot even photograph it so to
yes.
make it immortal Because now, because of cyberspace, you know, things can perhaps live a long, much longer in their virtual form, not
right.
as you can touch them, but at least you can see them.
See what it's like. That's
right,
true.
Right. Uh-huh. For instance, if I have a special plate or, you know, something that came down from my great-great-grandmother, it
mm-hmm.
could break or
mm-hmm.
Get destroyed in a fire or a flood or get lost.
Yeah.
But if I have a picture of it
yeah.
and I put the story of what it meant to me with that picture, the next
yeah.
generation can
yeah.
get a feel, a see, and really, you know, it can really mean something
you're right.
to them.
Mm-hmm. You're
so,
right.
So that's what I'm trying to evoke
yeah.
in the my peers, you know, people that would be perhaps not even as old as me because I'm quite old, but you know, to tell them or to get them to start thinking of their importance,
yeah.
you know, and what we all have to contribute, not only to our families, but perhaps to other people.
Yeah, that's true.
Because Jamaicans individually over the centuries, like other people in the world, have contributed a lot, not only to the Jamaican culture or to Jamaica itself, but to the world,
yeah.
to the entire world. And a lot of the things that they have done and are still doing are not really documented and recognized.
Yeah.
So, you know, if each of us try to start to do it, you know, it will make a difference. It
yeah.
definitely will make
true.
A difference.
You just gave me an idea because my mother passed something down to me from my grandmother. For each of us girls, she gave something that was coming from her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And now you gave me an idea because I sure going to take a picture of that. So far, thank God, I still have it. It's not broken, but you're right. Anything is possible, you know.
And not only should you take a picture, you should write
mm-hmm.
about its origin as far as you know it,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, right. with dates,
yes,
you know,
right.
when your mother passed away, when perhaps her mother passed away, if you know so.
Mm-hmm.
About it.
I remember my grandmother using it when I was a child. So
even that you could write about.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's
back.
Important that we, other people usually have to make up our stories for us if they want to or if it's important.
Right.
But we can do our stories ourselves because we have this marvelous tool,
that's
which
true.
Is the internet.
That's really true.
So I'm glad that you got, you know, inspired to do it. And
yeah.
I'm hoping that some of the listeners on the board, if they know of a senior, they might encourage them to do it or do it for them or help them to do it.
Yeah.
And for people coming by, even after the show is archived, I hope that we'll ignite something in them to start building
yeah.
our own museums and leaving a legacy for the next generation, because
yes.
we're just blessed because we have come so far, you know, humans, as you, that whether we're from Jamaica or any other part of the world, we're on the planet together,
mm-hmm.
and for those of us who are really seniors, we have come a long way
mm-hmm.
in
Amen.
Evolving, you know, from
yes.
from various stages,
yes.
and never before have we had the technology. My mother didn't have it.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So we need to really embrace it
mm-hmm.
and to make it be a tool that can help us to tell our story that, whether we believe it or not, can be and will be helpful to the next generation.
Yeah, and
so
also,
with that said,
also just want to say, also if they're around their grandkids or whatever, you know, try and introduce certain things to them that they have this interest to want to learn more or to see more, you know, tell them about how you grew up and how it was during your time, you know, talk to them about it. And then, you know, when they have that interest, of course, they'll go looking for it on the computer too, you know, so, because they know exactly what you're saying.
Right. Yeah, well, okay. You know, what really started Backyard Labbers for me is that I know that my eldest grandson just turned 8, and this was 2 years, two, 3 years ago. I know that most everything he was doing, even at 5 and 6, was on, going on the computer.
Yeah.
And when I went online to see what information was available about the period I grew up in Jamaica, there was not a lot.
You see?
There wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what gave me the idea to start Backyard Labrish.
Yeah.
I had wanted to do a magazine many, many years ago, but, you know, I just never had time, never got around to it. But now that I'm retired, and I took a trip to Europe and saw, to Madrid, and saw how people, not only is Madrid a wonderful, fabulous historical place to visit, because so much of their art and culture is retained, physically
yes.
retained.
Right.
But the people, the customs of the people were being still in the family that I stayed with, passed down from generation to generation. There were like 3-4 generations, you know, sort of doing the same things at a different level, but, you know, little rituals and things.
Yeah.
And I said, how neat,
yeah.
you know, because we're not doing a lot of the things that we grew up doing because times have changed so much
yes.
and everybody's so scattered and separated.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
However, as you say, even though we might not be able to physically do it, at least we can inform,
yes.
you know, the next generation about what we did.
Yes, yes.
And they can, whether they appreciate it or not, or we believe they do, because
they
as
listening.
I didn't think I was really paying attention when my elders was trying to give me information. It's like I didn't have time.
Yes,
I didn't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
But now as I get older, I'm very interested. So, you know, even though they might not seem interested now, you may be surprised 10, 20 years from this, that same person's feeling could change.
Yes, that's true.
So you know, it is important. It is important.
Yes.
So
also,
as we get...
just a little update with Aunt Gloria. She's coming along, you know. She can't eat anything solid. Everything has to be soft right now because the muscle in her throat.
Uh-huh.
If that improves and that gets better, then I think she'll be able to go home. But right now she's still in a nursing home.
Uh-huh.
Next month is her birthday. She'll be 95.
Bless her heart.
She's
well, please tell her that we are holding her in our prayers
yes.
and hope that she does recover and have her vibrance that she displayed when she was our guest on Backyard Labrish. And if any of our listeners want to go and listen to Aunt Gloria's story, you will find it if you look in the archives.
Right.
So she grew up, what town did she grow up in again?
Trelawney, Ultra Spring.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. So, interesting. She was quite an interesting guest.
I think she said Stuart Town, right?
Uh-huh. I
yes.
think so.
Yes.
I know she spoke about Irish Town because she could
yes.
trace her ancestors
sure.
to
yes.
moving to Irish Town when
right.
she was 2 or 3.
Right.
You know, to be close to their people.
Right.
So it's quite interesting. We have such interesting stories
yeah.
that I've heard of other seniors that are quite, you know, coherent and have a lot of memories.
Oh, yeah.
About someone, my girlfriend in Toronto just told me that someone died that she knew in a nursing home. I think she was like 96.
Yeah.
and that she was very conversational and had her memories of growing up in Jamaica until she died. Now, she has great-grandchildren that live in the States, and they perhaps will never hear her stories.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah, that's sad.
Because I don't know if they're ever written down. I don't know if anybody recorded them. But we're fortunate because at least Aunt Gloria, she, any of her next generation, you know, great grandchildren can always go online and hear her voice and hear her passion, and perhaps can relate to some of what she talked about when she was growing up.
Right.
So if any of our listeners have anyone or themselves that would like to share their stories with us, you know, it is always meaningful, not only to the people on the board, but you never know, people from all over the world listen into Blog Talk Radio and find things that they're interested in to listen to. And people can listen to the shows while they're checking their email, you know, or doing other things. They don't have to be here with us on a Wednesday night. And they do listen quite often between one show and the next, because I can see the numbers changing every time someone downloads a show. So I encourage you, if there's a show that interests you and it may interest one of your friends, you can copy and paste the address bar and send it to them, and they can listen to it at their convenience. Or you can ask them to become a fan of Backyard Labrish, because we're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love.
Amen.
And I am about to say goodnight. I want to thank my listeners again and to tell them how much I appreciate them. And Janine, I am so grateful for you. One of the things I'm thankful this year is just having the health and strength to do what I do. I really, really enjoy it. I enjoy doing the research. And I'm always open to suggestions for subjects that you would like us to discuss in the backyard. So do send me an email or let me know in some way. You can go to the website, which is www.backyardlabrish.com, and just send me a comment or a question or a suggestion. Or if you're on my list, you can send me a personal email. So please have a wonderful, safe, marvelous Thanksgiving Day.
You too.
Remember to bring to the conscious mind all the things that you are thankful for.
Amen.
Because when we live in the presence of gratitude, in an energy of gratitude, all sorts of wonderful things happen. We attract to us. Because, you know, there's so many things we can be complaining about.
Yes, always remember to give thanks for everything.
Right. If we think about all the things that we can be thankful about, usually they outnumber the things.
And also remember,
one thing, just think of all the people in Haiti after all that they went through. They're faced with another challenge.
Yes.
As we speak, which is the outbreak, you know, that they're having there now.
Yes.
So we have so much to be thankful for. So let us stay in the presence, in the consciousness of being thankful tomorrow as we partake of our wonderful Thanksgiving meal.
Amen.
And just remember all the less fortunate people in Jamaica.
Yes.
And all over the world as you give your thanks.
Just give a prayer for them when you're praying for yourself before you eat tomorrow. Just lift up the ones that really don't have anything.
Thank you so much, Janine, for that thought.
Yes.
And as usual, I appreciate you and
thank
ask you to come back next week and join us.
I will. And have a great day. I am going back to my macaroni and cheese that I'm setting up for tomorrow.
All right, I can smell it through the phone.
Yeah, this is the one from scratch with all the sharp cheese. And
all right.
I'm setting it up, and then tomorrow I'm going to get up and bake it, and then I have a bread pudding I'm going to bake too, so I'm going to be up pretty late tonight. So.
Great, fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, well,
okay.
Any of the listeners on the board want to put 2 cents in? Raise your hands now or forever hold your peace. Do I have any takers? Well, with that said, I want to thank you again for being with us in Backyard Lavish on Blog Talk Radio. And we hope that we'll have a very interesting topic next week. We hope you'll come back soon and tell your friends about us, and have a great day tomorrow. And as I always say, make it a great week.
Amen.
Good night.
God bless.
Thank you, darling.